You're listening to The Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
Good morning, I'm Matt Harris. It's The Morning Rush. Bill Carroll is off today, back tomorrow, just trying to get a couple days off in the middle of all of this craziness. How you doing this morning? Hope you're doing a bit better than Brian Adams and that meltdown Chris Holzke just explained in the news. He kind of went off a bit yesterday on his Instagram feed, posting it to Twitter as well. And can't drop a bunch of the words, but that one's going to cause some backlash. Right? He said, thanks to some bad-eating, wet-market animal-selling virus, greedy, and he just kept going on. That's why he can't play the shows. Maybe doing us a bit of a favor, retiring Brian Adams for a while. But anyway, he was having quite the meltdown yesterday. Good to go. One thing that annoyed me yesterday was our premier, Doug Ford, admitting that he had all of his daughters over for Mother's Day. And what annoyed me was the hypocrisy of it, right? Telling us for so long that you can only have five people over, anyone outside of your immediate family at your house was a bad idea. And while I FaceTimed my mom for Mother's Day, Doug Ford just had all the kids over. And I was getting some backlash for it yesterday on social media because people were saying, well, this just highlights how stupid all the rules are. The fact that you can't make these decisions about who to have over is just his daughters. What's the big deal? Well, once your kids move out, they're not part of your immediate household. And if we weren't following the rules, would have been nice for him to tell me that on Friday so I could have went to see my mom. And you could have went to see yours instead of doing visits from the curb or visits through a window. Right? Listen, I get we're just kind of making this stuff up as we go along, but at least be a little clear. You want to tell us we can all go see our moms on Mother's Day? Tell us that on Friday. Don't come out there and just kind of drop that on us yesterday in some Monday afternoon press conference while the rest of us were going through great lengths to keep our distance. Just a little bit of consistency in the messaging would be nice. If that's off, we can go visit our parents, then can I go? Is that good? It's just the rest of us sitting here following these rules. And then you just hear the premier say, yeah, I had the kids over. We didn't have their husbands over, but we had the kids over. Okay, so how are you making that call? I don't know, just a bit of consistency would be nice. I get being tired of these regulations. I get it. It's been, by our count, this is our ninth week doing these kind of restrictions here at the station. I think we were maybe a week early. So maybe some of you are going into your eighth week. Whatever it is, it's long. I haven't had friends or family over to my place in that period. Haven't been to my parents. I'd love to go. Would have loved some FaceTime this weekend. Apparently those rules don't apply to you if you're the premier. So that was a disappointing moment. Overall, I think he's been pretty good in this. The cottage trip was another misstep. So you got two in the course of 4 or 5 days, right? You got him saying, after telling you not to stay home, he drove out to the cottage on the Easter weekend, and now after saying keep it to groups of five and no one outside your immediate household, he said, yeah, I had my daughters over. It's just another disappointing moment. In otherwise pretty good display from the premier in all of this. I think the general consensus is he's handled it pretty well. And I don't have a ton of problems with the prime minister either, by the way. I can do without the melodramatic speeches every day, but that's kind of who he is. I've come to accept it. But if you're going to tell us to keep our visits to our immediate family members, and you're going to tell us not to gather in groups of more than five. Follow it yourself. And don't come out there at a press conference on Monday and just openly talk about it like it's no big deal. Like we're the idiots for questioning these guidelines. Here he was yesterday.
I'll give you an example at our home. We have the girls, and the girls came over. There was six of us, a direct family. None of the husband, boyfriends, no one came, just themselves. And I think if we can keep it to as small as possible gatherings, that would be very helpful.
If we're doing that now, fine. It just would have been nice to know on Friday before the rest of you spent Mother's Day visiting mom through a window.
Well, sure.
Or on FaceTime. If those are the new rules, if you're making them up as you go and these are the new ones, it would have been nice to have a heads up so the rest of us could have had those visits too. It's not the end of the world by any means, but it was something that annoyed me yesterday. And it's just it's a knock on the premier and an otherwise pretty good handling of this situation. But it's one of those things, you know, it was like the cottage with Justin Trudeau was a bit of a slow burn with me. And it left a sour taste, and I think the sour taste is still there, and then you see the premier doing it. And what I mean by that was, when I first saw the pictures of Justin Trudeau at the cottage for the weekend, or Harrington Lake, some people get mad when you call it a cottage. It's a lakeside residence. He has two homes. We're told not to cross borders. He went and did it. And at first it was... yeah, let him have time with the family. And then I started getting angry about it. The longer I thought about it, I said, no, you know what? Why am I stuck at this house?
Yeah.
And I can't leave.
Practice what you preach.
And so it was a bit of a slow burn for me over a couple of days. Like, the more I thought about it, the angrier I got. And that's why the Doug Ford one yesterday, it was right away. There was anger and not anger, just annoyance. Just come on, man.
Yeah, come on, man.
I'm sitting up here FaceTiming all my friends. We're having Zoom beers. I haven't had real human-to-human interaction other than you, Dave. No offense to you, but I'd like to see other people.
I'm as good as it gets, but I'm only
and
so much.
Apparently, he can have a family full of six. And he's saying it's his immediate family. Once your kids move out, they're not immediate family anymore. Mm. Otherwise, I would have seen my parents by now.
That's true.
So,
otherwise, I would have seen my parents by now, who live in town, by the way.
Right, exactly.
Like, I'm not crossing borders. I'm just following the rules.
Would have been nice to drive out to Orleans and go to your dad's house,
right?
But no. Right? So while the rest of us are sitting here following that, he just drops that on us. And it's like, oh, okay, this is what we're doing now? Would have been nice to know. Anyway, he also was starting to talk about schools and education and the state of emergency in this province. State of emergency looks like it'll be extended until June 2nd. They'll be back in the legislature today. Here's the premier yesterday on that.
So we're going to make it clear next week, early next week. We'll have an announcement on that. We'll also, before someone asks, we'll have an announcement for going back to school early next week. They're just crossing the T's, dotting the I's on the plan moving forward.
If you had to take a bet, do you think we're going back to school June 1st, or do you think this is it for the school year? There's no wrong answer here. I mean, one of them is obviously.
My guess, just based on the way they're speaking versus the Quebec government, I would say no, there won't be students back in school. It's just my guess, but.
Yeah, it's almost 3 weeks away, right?
That's
June 1st
exactly.
Is, two and a half weeks.
For sure.
I wouldn't be surprised if we see it.
I think that, like you said yesterday, it'd be good for kids to get in for at least a short time before the summer vacation, but.
For the same reason, I want to go to my parents, and I understand why the premier wants to have his daughters over. Kids want to go to school and see some friends, right?
Sure.
We're craving that interaction right now. So it wouldn't surprise me either way. I think if they think there's a safe way to do it for just a few weeks, they'll get in there. Premier says the government and three opposition parties have collaborated on a number of measures over the last 2 months, and he wants that to continue.
I just don't have the time. I'm not in the mood for that. I want to move the province forward. We have bigger fish to fry than argue with each other in the ledge.
Anyway, the Mother's Day thing, not the end of the world by any means. It was a quick, annoying moment. It was funny, Dave, my mom texted me yesterday and said, so can I go to my parents with my brothers now? And I was like, well, apparently we're just making this up as we go along.
I guess so.
But she made an interesting point. She said, you know, my mom went to my grandparents for Mother's Day and just kind of stood on the front lawn and talked to them, you know, 10,
yeah,
15
absolutely.
Feet, which, like, it would have been nice to go inside if those are the rules we're all of a sudden making.
Well, at the
would
end
have been
of the
nice
day,
to know.
At the end of the day, you know, the premier can put his family at risk, and you have to weigh those risks yourself, right? I mean, if your parent is an elderly person who's at a higher risk, you may not want to.
No, but my—
just because the premier's doing it doesn't mean it's a good idea, right?
It doesn't, like, but all my point is that it would have been nice to know on Friday that we were just—
for sure, yeah.
That's all. If you want to be treated like adults and make your own decisions, that's fine. That's just not what we've been telling people.
Yeah.
We've been telling people to keep it under 5, only in your household, all
for
that
sure.
stuff, right? So if the advice now is to use common sense and be treated like adults, that's fine. It just would have been nice to know that.
Definitely.
Last week. It's 6:16, the Morning Rush. I'm Matt Harris, in for Bill Carroll, who's off today and back tomorrow.
Ottawa in 58 seconds.
Felt the need to tell people that because I was starting to get some nervous emails asking what was going on. Does he have COVID? No, he's back tomorrow.
No, definitely
it's
not.
It's all good. Yeah. From CTV News, here's Chris Holsky.
There will be a select group of MPPs in the Ontario legislature today. They're expected to extend the provincial state of emergency order until June 2nd. From the CTV Weather Center, sun and cloud with a chance of flurries or showers this afternoon, the high 8. Right now, it's -3 degrees.
Do you think we'll see sports anytime soon, Chris?
Well, they're talking about a couple of months from now, MLB possibly restarting. But
yeah, hockey, basketball, do you think the season's done?
I'll believe it when I see it. The AHL canceling their season yesterday, I think, doesn't bode well for the NHL.
Yeah, that's been my kind of belief system this whole time. I'll believe it when I see it. Like, and I don't even mean they start getting these— they're talking about having games in about like 4 cities. I'm not even talking about that. I'll believe it when the puck drops on the very first game.
Yeah, that's about right.
Because I just feel like there's so much that can go wrong leading up to this.
It seems like it's moving a lot faster overseas. I know the German soccer league, the Bundesliga, is starting on Saturday.
And I saw the Premier League June 1st. No
yeah.
fans in the stands, but apparently
I think June
12th
will be like their kickoff day.
So it's like a training camp type situation. After
I absolutely do not get this talk in the NHL about having an expanded playoff format if that's what they go forward with by adding 3 more teams. Why would you want more teams right now instead of fewer teams?
Because I think what they're worried about, and I don't disagree with you, by the way, but I think what they're worried about is you call the season now, those teams that were just about fighting for a playoff spot, they're
the
going to scream that it was unfair.
There are more important things to worry about than that.
No, I understand. Listen, I understand. And I don't want to give up any hope. I'm holding on to that slim chance that we see the puck drop on a season, and hopefully soon, because I'm starting to go crazy.
August.
Netflix. I think I've watched everything on Netflix now.
Oh, I've exhausted the whole internet. Like, it's just— I got nothing.
And I'm tired of seeing the old games. It was cool for a bit, and now it just makes me miss the new ones.
Yeah, the archival ones. It's a plus, if you're trying to relive, you know, Toronto's glory years, there aren't very many of those games that were—
they're not in color.
You
know? That's the problem. They're barely on video.
Low def.
Anyway, I don't like talking to you anymore. It's 6:18, the Morning Rush. I'm Matt Harrison for Bill Carroll. We'll take a break. When we come back, well, Gord Wilson will stop by, the voice of the Ottawa Senators. We'll talk to him. He's obviously still holding out hope, but how realistic is it that we see a hockey season anytime in the near future? That's coming up next, The Morning Rush.
2-goal game for Thomas Chabot. He absolutely undresses Igor Azhiganov.
At the Rink with Gord Wilson.
Good morning, Gord. How are you?
I'm good, Matt. How are you, sir?
I'm good. I'm getting desperate for sports content. I watched a UFC fight on Saturday.
Yeah, you did, didn't you? And that will continue.
I mean, let's not be crazy. I didn't pay for the pay-per-view, but I watched the pre-fight on TSN.
Yeah, absolutely. And nobody in the stands to watch it at all. So, obviously, it's a made-for-television event, and they capitalize on TV revenue, unlike some other sporting events like hockey and football, where bums in the seats are required. Boy, I really fear for the CFL. I hope they, sad to say, but I hope the government does step up and bail this company out.
Yeah, I don't know what the answer is there. I just feel like the plan that they submitted just didn't have enough details yet. Like, I'd want to see a better plan before you give out that money. But yeah, you worry about these sports leagues that really rely on the ticket revenue, right? And I mean, I'm a CFL season ticket holder. I paid up my money for this coming season, was ready to go, and now it's gone. I mean, I could probably just push that over to next year.
And which is probably what you're going to be asked to do. In fact, I had this discussion yesterday with a season ticket holder, and he said the same thing. He said, I'm going to push it over if that's what's asked. But at the same time, he said, I'm not sure if even next summer I'll be comfortable sitting in a stadium filled with 27,000 people.
Yeah, it's interesting how this has developed, right, over the last 8 or 9 weeks. And at first it was like, okay, I can't wait to get back to a concert, yep, and I can't wait to get back to a hockey game. Now you're looking into next season going, I'm not even sure I want to – because you'll be looking over your shoulder all the time.
Well, right? You will be, yeah. There's no question. I think the self the social distancing will continue for – I'm guessing for many, many years to come. You know, if you're a Belleville Senators fan, what are you thinking right now? Here's a team that has its season canceled without hope at all of finishing the regular season, finishing strong, and going into postseason play. And for the first time in 80-plus years, the Calder Trophy will not be awarded to the top team in the American Hockey League, which has got to be, Matty, I would think, a major, major disappointment, not just for the fans of the Belleville Senators, but for the organization as a whole, because this was, in fact, I think, part of the plan. And we all remember the plan being unveiled a couple of years ago when Pierre Dorion dismantled the team, saying goodbye and parting ways with a number of star-studded players, thinking we're going to put an eye to the future, and the future begins in Belleville. And, you know, not missing the play or not making the playoffs last year to this year, leading their division and an odds-on favorite going into Calder Cup play as a potential champion of that league. And now to have it all washed away, my goodness, it certainly wasn't part of the plan.
Yeah, and, you know, you got that season canceled, and I wonder how much, you know, yeah, they were leading their division or having a great season, but winning in the playoffs, do you think that there's, do you put much stock in that you can learn lessons from winning in the playoffs at one level and take those lessons into the National Hockey League?
Absolutely. I certainly do, yeah, and I think most people in professional hockey do as well, and it can only serve as a building block to one's future. It can tell you an awful lot about a specific player in terms of how he adjusts his game, in terms of how he reacts to certain situations. They say, you know, the season is divided into three. There's the exhibition season, which means relatively nothing. There's the regular season, and then there's the new season called the playoffs. And things do change, whether you like to believe it or not. And it's not just officiating, it's the type of play. Everybody needs to be that much more ramped up and more competitive, and you get a chance to see just how competitive and how ramped up certain players can be, and a truly missed opportunity for sure.
Have you gotten a sense of the timing for the NHL? I mean, I know end of May, I think I heard that they were looking to finally get some kind of training camp started to get players back. But is there like a drop-dead date where, guys, we can't do this anymore if it goes past a certain point? Are we there yet, do you know?
Nope, not at all, not even close. And I think the fact that the NHL is still hedging or fudging on potential decisions to be made, they keep putting things off, like the draft. You know, they thought that the draft might be held in June, early June, and we thought an announcement on that would have been 2 weeks ago, and then it got pushed back a week, and last week they said, well, we're just still contemplating. So I think all possibilities are still on the table, and I think they will be for at least another month. Interesting story about the NBA yesterday that came out saying they're looking at the possibility of restarting in July, the end of June, early July, meaning training camps, you know, sometime in June, and every sports league, NBA and NHL specifically, will have to have a training camp of some sort. The good news about the NHL, it's certainly here in Ottawa, is in Ontario, Ottawa and Toronto do have permission from the government to open up their facilities for small groups of training. Now, the NHL is not allowing that yet, so the competitive balance remains the same, but no timetable whatsoever, Matt, which is interesting, because I think they're still holding, my own personal thought is, I think it leads credence to the thought that they are holding out hope that the NHL regular season can finish. The Senators still have 11 games left. Most teams have 11 or 12 games remaining of the regular season before starting playoffs. So I'm keeping my fingers crossed that we do see it, but stranger things have happened.
Yeah, that
sure.
that was what the next thing I wanted to ask you about, because I guess if you go right to the playoffs, obviously the Senators wouldn't play there. So if they're holding out hope for a regular season, that's some good news for local fans. Get to see at least some action on not in person, but on TV for
sure. Yeah, for sure. But the interesting thing is, if the NHL is talking about going through the summer months of playing playoff hockey, and there is that proposal of round robin play where 24 teams make it in, another 7 don't play, and if the season for next year gets ramped up by December, there will be 7 teams that have not played hockey for 8 months, including the Senators. And the AHL likely will start when the NHL's plan to start will be. So it's a major, major stumbling block or speed bump in the road to development for specifically the Ottawa Senators. I mean, I can't imagine having your young players go 8 months without competitive hockey.
I was reading something a couple weeks ago, and I thought of you. I meant to send it along, but it was, I think, a guy from the TSN TV crew who was saying one problem the fans are going to have if they play games in an empty stadium. He said, you don't understand how much swearing goes on there. You're not ready to hear what the crowd noise filters out. This is going to be a problem.
I can attest to that. A couple of years ago at the end of the season, I was between the benches for our radio broadcasts, and at one point I took my headset off so I could hear the banter between Jake Muzzin of the Leafs and Brady Tkachuk and Zach Smith of the then Ottawa Senators, and it was priceless. I mean, these guys take chirping to the next level. Some have the ability to take it to the next level, and I mean, I was in tears listening to the banter and watching the reaction of Jake Muzzin from what Zach Smith and Brady Tkachuk had to say. So it can be entertaining. It can be very foul, though, as well, and that could pose a bit of a problem.
Yeah, that's what this guy had said. He's like, you're not prepared for what you're going to hear. If you don't like the F word, you are not in for a good time.
Yeah, there's a little more than na-na-na boo-boo.
Yeah, exactly. All right, Gord, it was great catching up. We'll talk to you on Thursday.
Sounds good, Matt. Thank you.
Gord Wilson, the color commentator for TSN 1200. He's heard a lot of stuff between those benches that we didn't get to hear on the radio broadcast, and it's probably for the best. It's 6:30, the Morning Rush. Toast to the ones that we lost on the way, because the drinks
bring back all the memories. You're listening to The Morning Rush with Bill Carroll on News Talk 580 CFRA.
I'm Matt Harrison for Bill Carroll. He's off for a couple days and back on Wednesday. It's The Morning Rush. So this can be a tough time for people. Just the lockdown, social isolation becomes a real threat, right? You're not interacting with people. We were talking earlier about how we miss our friends. Play a clip of a girl who's in grade 3 who said she missed her friends, and I think we can all kind of relate to that, right? And it's easy to get down, but how do you know if someone is struggling maybe a bit beyond that? I think we're all struggling to a certain extent, but how do you know when it's time to step in? Are there warning signs that you can look for? Well, here's someone who can probably answer that question for us. Sue Mercer is a social worker, researcher, and expert all around with the Mental Health Commission of Canada, and she was nice enough to join us on the line. Good morning, Sue.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing okay, but I think a lot of us are struggling to a certain extent with this, and I think that's very understandable. But I'm just wondering, how do you know if someone in your life may be struggling a bit more than the rest of us? Are there warning signs you can look for? And is it tougher when we're all sort of maybe feeling a little down, or maybe we're nervous about a job loss or where the income's going to come? How do you sift through all that to know who really needs our help right now?
Well, I think your point about everyone feeling something is really important, because what we need to know and what we need to look for, whether we're looking at ourselves, our neighbors, our friends, or family, is there a change? So we've all changed a bit. So maybe, you know, we're having a little bit more trouble sleeping, or we haven't quite gotten around to sorting that closet we want to do for weeks. But what we look for, you know, when we're working with people with mental health experiences or not feeling great, is a change. So if you, you know, during this time are not sleeping, so, you know, say you normally go to sleep at 10, you wake up at 6, and during this you've kind of found, well, you know, I'm falling asleep at midnight, but I'm still getting up at 6, and that's your normal. But if it continues and all of a sudden you're, you know, going to sleep at 1 and getting up at 3, and that continues on, well, then something shifted, and your body, your mind, you're not doing as okay as you were before. So I think if you're looking for, you know, what to look for in others or yourself, is look for change. And if you hear people saying, you know, I'm not sleeping, or, oh my God, you know, I ate four hamburgers for breakfast, and then I ate four more for lunch, and then I ate four more for supper, and I don't usually do that. So if that continues on, well, that's a sign to say, okay, we need to figure out what's going on here.
It's one thing to recognize it in yourself, another thing to recognize it in another person. But okay, so you recognize it, maybe it's in yourself, or maybe you recognize it into someone else. It can be overwhelming to reach out for help. People don't know where to go. So where's that first step? Who should I be referring someone to? Is it making them a counseling appointment? Should I be seeking immediate help? And how do I know where to reach out?
So the one thing that I think is, you know, if I see a positive at all in this pandemic, is that mental health is being talked about, and that the fact that we're asking people to reach out is out there. So, you know, the Mental Health Commission of Canada, they have a hub on their website which lists all kinds of resources, from immediate to workplace to longer term. The Kids Help Phone has opened up their texting and their phone line to everyone. And in fact, when I work with people with children, I say, you know, put that Kids Help phone line on your fridge or on your wall or on your bulletin board, and tell them it's okay to text. You know, tell them you text or you call them. And so the first step, I think, for anything is to look at what has been available. Now, certainly, you know, if you're talking to someone and they're talking about, you know, very extreme things, so you're getting very, very worried because you hear them talk about, you know, I'm not going to make it through the night, or, you know, there's no way that I can last until, you know, supper time. Life has just gotten too bad, it's too dark, then you can look at, you know, immediately calling 911 if that's a concern you have. But if it's something you're more worried about and you want them to reach out for help, or even if you want to call and say, you know, this is what's going on with my family or my friend, what do I do? There's a lot more online and phone options that are available now.
Yeah, because I think if someone is in immediate harm, people know what to do in that situation, right? So that's almost the easy one to deal with. It's the rest of it. I mean, I look at myself, and I've been sleeping a little bit more. I'm definitely not eating as well as I was, and my gym's closed, so I've just kind of been sitting, packing on the pounds. But I think I'm okay overall. You know what I mean? So it's mm-hmm. But it's hard to know when you're looking at someone, maybe, is it, okay, yeah, we're all just struggling a bit, or is that person struggling more? How do you make that decision? And maybe it's okay to reach out and have it be a false alarm. It's better than not doing anything, isn't it?
Totally. And that's what I say to people during this is, you know, people want to reach out and people want you to reach out. And that's what I've noticed, whether it's in my community or with family or with clients, is that, you know, oh, you know, someone dropped something off at the front of my house with a note that says, hope you're doing okay. And that made such a difference. So I think it's okay. I do think, and I hear from people, that, you know, these phone lines and these online support are now being used by many, many people who, you know, we know there's stigma around mental illness. So for years, people would say, oh, that's not me. I would never do that. I would never call. There's a shift during this period. People are feeling the way you're feeling, or I'm feeling, or everyone's feeling. And some days you just may want to know, is this okay? Am I going to get through this? And there are trained professionals and trained volunteers and trained clinicians answering these phones, online chats, texting right across Canada.
With that, and with the raised awareness and people actually being able to reach out, are we seeing a strain on resources across the country as more people seek help?
I haven't heard that. I think we've certainly seen a lot of people step up to offer resources. We also need to be aware that, you know, this is extra for clinicians too, you know, to be doing things virtually or on the phone. So I think it's important for them to get their own help and their own support during this time. But from what I've heard from various clinics or other professionals that I've spoken to, is that they've managed to meet the need, to meet the demand. Now, I'm only really speaking locally. I'm in Halifax, so I can't speak across the country, but I haven't heard of anybody saying they can't get through to any of these supports.
I think we have a tendency to overthink things. I know myself in general, but I think people in general, they overthink this kind of stuff. And if you see someone struggling, you could be cycling through, okay, what am I going to say to that person when I reach out to them? How am I going to bring this up? And you can work yourself into this nervous frenzy. What should you say? Or is it just as easy as just picking up the phone and just having a regular conversation, just letting that person know you're there? Or are there specific questions you should be asking when you call?
Well, I think if you're just checking in and, I haven't talked to you in a while, how are you doing? But if it's someone that you have some specific concerns about, and you can always say, I've noticed that you've mentioned that you haven't been sleeping. Like, has that been going on for a while? So just, bring it up that way. Or you can talk about what's going on with you the way you just did. I think I'm doing okay, but, my gym's closed and I'm not working out. How are you doing? And their answer back can give you a sense of what's going on there. We've got to be nice to ourselves and each other during this time. Like, we can't have high expectations that we're all doing 100%. So if someone says, I'm doing okay, but thanks for calling and can you check in tomorrow, then you kind of know where they are. And then if you talk to them in the next couple of days and things have gotten worse, then it's a little bit of a red flag for you to say, well, here's a phone number, do you want to give that a call?
Do you get a sense of the type of person who struggles more in this scenario? And the reason I bring it up is because I was thinking, I'm someone who can be very comfortable just going home at the end of a work week, putting on Netflix, ordering some takeout, and just kind of shutting out the world for the weekend. So for the first little while, this was fantastic, right? And I feel like people who need to always be around friends and have those big gatherings may be struggling more than people who tend to keep to themselves. Do you think there's anything to that, or do you think everyone's struggling across the board?
Well, it's like I said in the beginning, I think everybody has their own normal or healthy. I don't like the word normal, but their own healthy. So you're right. I hear that, friends, family, clients. Like, this was great in the beginning. I didn't have to answer the phone. I didn't have to talk to anyone. I could eat what I wanted. But then as it dragged on, and, it does become a little bit more of a challenge. And one of the things I think we can do here is set up some regular things. So even if you're someone that you're by yourself all the time, you're quite happy with that, or you're someone that, has a huge party every weekend, if you set up a regular check-in with a couple of people via telephone or text or video link once a week or once every 2 weeks, whatever you need, then at least there's that ongoing contact.
Well, Sue, thanks for making time for us. I think there was a lot of great advice in there, and I hope people who are listening maybe pick up the phone and call someone that they haven't talked to in the last little while. Just see how they're doing. Just do a check-in call on somebody today. If that's the one takeaway from this conversation, I think that's a good thing.
That'll be great. And so get on your phone when you go home.
Sounds good, Sue. Take care. Nice meeting you.
Thanks, Matt. Bye-bye.
Sue Mercer, researcher, social worker, and expert all around at the Mental Health Commission of Canada. She's based
in Ottawa in 58 seconds.
From CTV News, here's Chris Holsky.
Well, the Ontario legislature sits today with a select group of MPPs. They are expected to push through an extension of the provincial state of emergency to June 2nd. From the CTV Weather Center, sun and cloud with a chance of flurries or showers this afternoon. The high just 8 degrees. Right now, it's -3.
Don't say it. Oh, you said flurries. Too late. I was reading yesterday, it could be the coldest May 12th on record. Do we break the record? Do we know?
It doesn't look like it so far. I'll take a second look. I know that we were getting close, but -3 right now, technically -2.8. I'll get through the numbers and I'll have an answer for you.
All right. We're close?
I think we're close.
I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. If we're going to be miserable, might as well be record-setting miserable.
Right?
It's the Morning Rush. I'm Matt Harris. We'll take a break. When we come back, medical myth-busting Dr. Barry Dworkin. The headline, extreme vigilance needed to go back to work and school after the coronavirus lockdown.
Tell me straight, Doc. What is it?
Medical myth-busting with Dr. Barry Dworkin.
Good morning, Doctor. How are you this morning?
I'm fine, Matt. How are you?
I'm good. It seems like most of the headlines are starting to just revolve around reopening. People are getting a little bit antsy, and fair enough. This one, extreme vigilance needed to get back to work, school, after the coronavirus lockdown, according to the World Health Organization. I mean, kind of stating the obvious there, though, right?
Yes, it is.
We gotta be vigilant when we go back to work. Well, thanks. On it. But what is... right, so there we go. But what's it going to look like in your mind when we get back, though? Are we all going to go back to work and the grocery store and all of this stuff wearing masks and gloves? Or do you think it's common sense, distancing, combination of all of them? Do you think there's a perfect answer there?
There's no perfect answer, and I think there's no perfect answer because people will be people, right? We are inherently social beings, and it is easy to go back into autopilot in terms of how we interact with others. And So, you know, for example, in this article where they say, you know, you're going to have to make sure that children stay away, stay apart from each other so that, you know, when they're playing, you have physical distancing. Yeah. So you're going to be telling 5 and 6 year olds to stay distant from them and give them all complexes because now you're going to be on them all day telling them, oh, don't go near your friend. Oh, don't go near your friend. I mean, think about the harm that happens to children if you keep that message at them all the time when they go to school. A lot of them will not understand why this is happening. So this whole idea of somehow we are going to magically develop a system so that you can prevent the spread of the virus as you relax rules is a pipe dream. It's just not going to happen. You're going to have all kinds of exceptions. People are going to rationalize why they did certain things. Just look at what our premier just said when he had his daughters come visit him. There's always rationalizing your behavior so that it seems that you're following the rules, and that's what's going to happen. Despite public health and their advice, there's going to be a point where people are going to say, okay, well, that's fine, but I can do this because I seem to be following the rules. And it's just, yeah, you may have people wearing masks, but not all of them will wear masks. You may have people physical distancing, but not everybody's going to be physical distancing. And the virus doesn't care whether you're following it 100% or 50% because it will find a way to spread.
And when you talk about the premier, it annoyed me off the top of the show because I just thought, you know, I've been sitting here for, I think this is the 9th week where I haven't seen a single person really outside of work hours. You know, Dave Tripp's the only person I see in person. I love the guy, but I'd like to see other people, you know what I mean? So that's what kind of annoyed me about that. But you're right. I could make the case for going to see my parents this week under that logic. But when we all start doing it, then we lose what we've been working at the last several weeks, right?
Sure, you can say that, you know, hey, I've been isolated, I'm not sick, I'm okay, so I'm going to go visit my parents or visit my friends, and because we're not sick and we're all isolating, yeah, and I completely understand that rationale. I mean, I've been thinking like that too, but I've been avoiding, you know, my son is living on his own he has his own house, and he's out in Stittsville, and he hasn't been able to come visit here at all. And I know he's not sick because he's working from home, but, you know, that's the way things are. So, you know, he goes out for a run. He likely passes people as he's going for a run. So there's always that risk. So he, you know, I could rationalize it very easily, saying, yeah, the risk is probably going to be really low. But no, and you also have to set an example. You know, if I do that, what kind of person am I giving advice and trying to follow the direction of public health by saying, well, yeah, it's okay for everybody else, but not for me. You just can't do that. Otherwise, your credibility is out the window.
I was sure when we started this about 8 weeks ago that in my mind, I was like, you know what, 2-3 weeks, we'll be back to work, everything will be good. And I just realized just how ignorant that thinking was. And I don't think I'm alone in that. I think there were a lot of people that said, oh, great, you know, two weeks of watching Netflix and snacking and not going to the gym, I'll be fine. I'm not fine, Doc.
No, well, but this is an extraordinary circumstance. No one in their lifetimes, really, you know, aside from maybe a few people that are over 100 years old but wouldn't remember anyway, has gone through a pandemic. And it's a very different animal than usual, you know, flu season and cold season and, you know, other illnesses. So we don't have anything to gauge against, and so we hopefully tend to be optimistic and say, yeah, this is not going to be too long. But again, this is an extraordinary circumstance, and we're not even halfway through this, unfortunately. And as we, you know, the optimism is now being projected onto opening things up, and you know, you'll see certain provinces opening up, and you'll see clusters start up again. Even in China now, they've had in Wuhan, they've had a cluster outbreak again. After everything they've done, they're still getting clusters, or at least after everything they've claimed they've done, they're still seeing clusters. Germany, the same thing. South Korea, the same thing. These were countries that had better infrastructure in place than we do in terms of testing and contact tracing, and they're still getting clusters as they open up. So imagine here where we don't have that, despite everybody's, you know, despite politicians saying, yeah, we're doing a lot of testing, you're not doing anything close to what is needed in order to ensure that you are going to capture clusters and contact trace, and that you're still talking about opening up early. It's optimism, but it's misguided optimism.
When we do finally see that the opening up, it's probably inevitable that we see those clusters that you just talked about. Yeah. When we do see one, do you think we'll close down? Let's use Ontario as an example. Let's say there's a cluster in North Bay. Are they going to just shut down the city of North Bay, or do they shut down the whole province of Ontario? Do you get a sense of where that would be headed?
Well, that's a great question, and that's why you have to do contact tracing, right? You have to catch things early. So say it was in North Bay and you found out 24 hours later. Well, now you have to contact everybody who is in contact with the person or people who were sick and see where they went. And if they went to Toronto, or if they went to came here, or they went to Armpire, or they went to Renfrew, wherever they went, you would then have to follow those people in those towns and find out how many people they contacted and isolate those individuals. And that's why you can't have mass outbreaks, because it's almost impossible to follow that trail. You get this exponential, you know, this tree branching out in multiple directions, and it becomes more difficult to trace. That's why you have to have a lot of testing, so that you catch these things very early, so it's easier to trace 10 people, for example, than it is to trace 10,000 people, because each of those has interactions with others. So the other countries, such as Germany and South Korea, that are doing this, capture the clusters early. They report that they have the clusters. They're transparent about that, saying where it is. And then they shut down the areas that were affected. And that's what South Korea did. They shut down 2,100 bars and restaurants and businesses that were in contact with the people that were sick. That's what ends up happening. And it's quite disruptive. It's going to be an ongoing series of disruptions. There's never going to be a day, really, until there is a vaccine and people are now immune, that you're going to have nothing happening. There's always going to be these little outbreaks that are going to happen, and that will be the normal, where, okay, what's the weather today, and where are the clusters today? It's going to be that kind of thing, and what they're going to do for that day. This area is closed for the next 2 weeks, or this area is going to be open because we haven't seen any outbreaks. And it's almost going to be like a weather report for the next little while, telling you where and when you can go and what areas are just not available.
But that's exactly why I'm okay with these apps that may track where we are, for at least in the short term, because of what you just explained. Because people, and it's not that they're not honest, sometimes you ask someone where they've been in the last 24 hours and they're going to inevitably forget a spot. I'd be a lot more comfortable if they were carrying around something on their phone that tracked where they were.
Yeah, because you have to think about what's happening in real time, and where you're traveling, and where you're going, and where you're in contact, and the stores that you're in, and you don't know how many people you've been around. You're not really paying attention to that, how close you were to anybody. And so, yeah, I mean, there's the privacy issue, and people are not too thrilled about that. But really, people are tracked right now anyway on their phones by Google all the time when they have their location service on. So that data is still there. You're just not thinking of the fact that you're being tracked all day long with your phones anyway. So in this case, you're doing it to protect yourself and to protect others. It's not this nefarious tracing you and following you just because we want to know where you are. It's, in this case, if you've been near people that have been sick, we can actually tell you you've been near someone that's been sick to protect you from infection. And again, once we get to a vaccine, and that will happen, I have no doubt that will happen. Once all this will be moot, and you won't have to do that anymore, and you won't have to be tracked in terms of contact tracing anymore. But until then, we have to decide if that's the price people want to pay in order to be able to open things up a bit more. Otherwise, You're just traveling in a void and not knowing what's ahead of you.
I can't wait until your first segment after the vaccine, when the first anti-vaxxer goes public and we get to dissect that insanity. Have a great day, Doctor.
All right, you too.
Dr. Barry Dworkin, it's Medical Myth Busting. The Morning Rush, I'm Matt Harris.